Hi, I'm Grant Irvin, and welcome to the Grant Street Experience, our podcast about the interesting people and things that we talk about here on Grant Street at the great City County Building. I have my co-host with me, Rebecca Kiernan.
Hello.
And I also have my friend and colleague, James Hill.
Friend.
Come on. I told James I'm wearing a tie for him today. He said I should wear it every day. So, James, thanks for being one of our first inaugural guests
here,
on the Grant Street
lovely.
Experience. Yeah. So we've been having this conversation. Rebecca was our test guest, and she loved it so much she came back. So we're hoping that maybe you could be a frequent guest, frequent flyer here. If you could start off with folks just telling about who you are, special assistant to the mayor. Kind of what goes into that role and
what doesn't go into that role.
But tell us a little bit about James Hill.
Yeah, so a lifelong Pittsburgher, grew up in Highland Park, living in Manchester these days.
The Chester.
Is that what they call it?
That's
the,
what I call
the,
it.
The Chester, yeah. As they say on the streets. You can see Grant hangs out there often.
You not that you have to tell, but Liverpool.
Yeah, I was going to say.
You don't have to give the address.
Can you give your full address, please?
Yeah. Name, rank, serial number.
Zip code. Where do you keep your extra key?
It's under the floor mat.
I'm on Sheffield, which is a lovely, I love Manchester, beautiful homes, very in architecture and history, and the war streets of Manchester, just gorgeous, gorgeous.
Yeah.
You know, the brownstones and the row homes.
Awesome.
I've been with the mayor now. It's going on 5 years, might be 5 years. I can't really remember now. Yeah.
Wow.
And the bulk of it is just every day. You know, when you're mayor, everybody wants something. So we're going out and about, and I'm with them a good chunk of that time to bring as much information as we can back to the city-county building, you know.
Right.
Whether they're asking for their street to be repaved or an issue they've had with a police officer or this, that, and the other. You know, the bulk of it is when you're mayor, there's already so much on your mind. You can't possibly
keep it all in
also
there.
Solve everybody's problems you meet on the road. So
you're like the second brain for the mayor in many cases to like –
You know, we spend more than our share of time together.
Right.
We're getting him
from A to B, but also making sure the information comes back.
I mean,
right? We'll
never be to B on time, but we'll always make an effort to get to B on time.
That we will guarantee you. We're going to make the effort. That's like the Pittsburgh way, right?
Yeah, it's a fun job, and he's a great boss to work for. And, you know, we've gotten to meet so many cool people, so much cool stuff, presidents and political candidates and all sorts of great things.
That's awesome. And you're there for all of that too.
Yeah. If these walls could talk, you know, we've added our own stories, you know.
Is there anybody in particular that you've met where you're like, whoa, I just.
So this is so funny, but it was Edgar Snyder.
Really?
Yeah. I was like, Edgar Snyder?
Edgar Snyder?
Like, I was like, you know, like I've met presidents and like candidates and all sorts of people, but we were at a party at the Pennsylvania and I can't remember what it was for. I want to say it might have been like a children's hospital fundraiser or something like that. And Edgar Snyder walked in and I was like, oh my God, it's like Edgar Snyder. Like I was like stunned.
Yeah.
And I like the only time ever in history, I said, Mayor, can you take a picture of us? And I took a picture with Edgar Snyder at that party at the Pennsylvania.
That's pretty awesome.
So excited to meet him. Yeah, we spoke for a few minutes.
Was he cool?
He was very cool. He was so nice and... Gosh, doesn't look nearly as old as he must be, you know, that we all know. So.
I mean, he's a fixture in Pittsburgh.
Yeah, right? He's like, it's like one of those weird things of growing up. Like him and like this, he's just always been a presence in like Pittsburgh. And like you grow up seeing his commercials and,
he's everywhere.
Know, in the internet age, you know, he's a meme and a joke everywhere. That is just, it was really fun to meet him.
That's awesome. Now you grew up in Highland Park.
Yeah.
This is one of the things I wanted to talk to you about. Went to Schenley High School.
Alma mater, her we cherish.
Tell me about that. I'm I grew up outside of the city.
Very unfortunate.
Very unfortunate. But you know, similar experience with my alma mater. But I'm impressed by Schenley.
Yes.
And
it was the perfect American school.
Yeah, I mean, but impressed with the connections people have.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, share that.
It had such a strong hold on people. You know, I don't really know. You know, it's one of those intangible things where you couldn't really give a reason. But like you said, people who have gone there are, you know, our love for it has been...
It's deep.
Deep, you know, too deep probably, you know, to be healthy to some extent. But I think a lot of that has to do with, you know, the way the closure went down and how heavily debated it was and how there were so many back and forths. And the debate went on, you know, for years after it was closed, before the district sold it even, like to the very last... board hearing where they, you know, approved the sale. There was protesting that they shouldn't sell it and that they need to figure out a way to reopen it and everything. And it was, I'd always said the easiest way to describe it is schools are often closed when they are underperforming, not when they are doing well.
Right.
You know, and that it was, I think it felt like something that was really great and diverse and well represented.
Right.
The city was kind of taken,
away from us.
Away from us, the greater good and the people.
Now,
of the city.
Is there still a strong alumni connection?
Oh, yeah. I mean, well, these days people are just posting in, like, the Facebook group about nonsense. But,
okay.
You know, the alumni are still
school,
very, yeah. very strong. We actually, one of the alumnus just wrote a book about the school's history. He's actually a lawyer. He's in and out of this building all the time, Jake Orsicki. It's called the Shenley Experiment.
Okay.
And it's all about, it's actually really interesting because it's not just about the school itself. It's
the book
about,
is out now?
Yeah, it's out there. You should buy it.
Okay.
Are we allowed to sell things government TV?
No, Dave, the director said no.
I don't. You should go to the library and rent it.
The library was
our
non-sponsor sponsor last week.
Yeah, that's
with,
right. Yeah.
With Rebecca, too.
The library app is the best.
Yeah. So go to the library and rent it for free.
Okay.
As well as that new thing about Sophie Maslow. But it's really interesting because it describes in depth, you know, about how socioeconomic shaped the way the schools developed. And I think for city employees, we forget that, you know, in the city's heyday, it was also the school district's heyday, you know, and they were building and developing schools and education at a pace rapid to that of our growth, you know, as the
because
city
was growing.
So public schools were, you know, being built, constructed, and developed out the wazoo.
How old is
you
that know? Building?
It opened in 1916, October
2nd.
Yeah.
So just around the same time as the city county.
Yeah,
the
city county building. So like most of the average age of a school, I think, in the city is like 1903. But, you know, the vast majority of the high schools, the really big institutional ones were built, you know, in the late teens and early 20s.
Mm-hmm.
And it just is very interesting because it, you know, it's another perspective in how the city grew that I don't think we get because we're not in the school district, you know. But it was very interesting to see how politics has always played a role in where schools go and, you know.
Where
their physical locations are and, you know, what plots of land are put together and little things like who they're named after. Like it was really interesting. Well worth the read.
You're the guy to ask this about then,
okay.
too. So that development of Shenley, was that concurrent with the development of a lot of the other structures in Oakland at that time?
It was a little bit before, really. You know, I feel like Oakland's really in its second wave. I feel like a development now with the Oaklander recently, you know, and
yeah,
the new Shenley Place apartments.
Have you been there?
I went to the view is, first of all, amazing.
It's really
you never get
what
that view
it?
Of Shenley Park.
The Oaklander?
It's a hotel. Is it the restaurant or is that the hotel's name?
The hotel is the Oaklander.
The restaurant, I can't remember.
Yeah.
It's at right across from Soldiers and Sailors.
Oh, okay.
Behind the Athletic Association, which is now being renovated in and of itself.
So that's what I mean. Like, what's the time period for those buildings?
So, like, when they were built or when they were redeveloped?
When they were built.
Yeah, so the 1910 through 1920 was when Oakland
okay.
was being, you know, as its name implies, it was vastly farmland.
Right.
You know, and the cathedral and Shenley and, like, the Athletic Association were the first buildings to really pop up in that area. Soldiers and Sailors at that
mm-hmm.
point, you know, and then Presby. And then that was really the last of large structures.
Large buildings.
It was the mishmash of the little buildings that kind of make up the left-hand side when you're going down Fifth were the rest at that time. But those were the monumental, you know, structures of the age.
Because the cathedral came in the 30s?
Yeah, they started, I believe, if memory serves me, in the late 20s. I think it may have opened. It was late, either 29 or like very early 30s it opened,
okay.
yeah.
That's interesting. But, I mean, so it was kind of planned but not planned? Like it just organically occurred.
Yeah, I think it was, I think it started really when Carnegie set up the library there.
Mm.
You know, Pitt was around but not growing nearly as fast. And once Carnegie was looking for like a big plot of land that wasn't downtown for the library, you know, a part of it was he wanted it to be set in a tranquil setting.
Uh-huh.
You know, around that time, Bigelow set up Shenley Park and all that stuff
yeah.
as well. So really, well, the kickoff I'd say was Shenley Park.
Okay.
You know, then came the library. And then based upon the library setting up roots, I think that's what created it as an educational
hub.
I'm not sure Shenley particularly fell into that in the sense. I think eventually it fit in well with the landscape, but I think
sure.
they were mostly looking for, you know, at that time, the East End school was Peabody and Westinghouse. You know,
okay.
Westinghouse wasn't around yet, but Peabody was in the East End. So they were looking for, you know, another more central to the east, but you know, you couldn't go too deep downtown.
So then, Peabody preceded Chevron?
Yeah, Peabody was 1911, it would have been. Fifth Avenue High School was still around in those days.
Yeah.
So there needed to be the in-between between Fifth Avenue and Peabody was where kind of Schenley came from. And this was before Alderdice came to be or Westinghouse, which were both shortly thereafter. Yeah.
So where does, I have a bunch of questions here, but Where does your encyclopedic knowledge of this come from?
Well, it's all lies.
It's all lies.
How would you know any better, Grant?
As we go along?
If there's one thing I learned in
Rebecca's
politics.
Rebecca's here to fact check stuff.
Yeah, I don't even know where to start.
She's enthralled.
Your laptop's not even open.
You fooled me.
There's one thing I learned under this roof is if you walk in, just talk with authority. People don't question you.
That's all that matters.
Nobody questions anything. No, I've always loved, you know, schools particularly. I just find them to be very. I love public education as a monumental institution of neighborhoods, you know. And I've always, you know, been.
And as a topic of scholarship, also.
What?
As a topic of scholarship.
Yeah, it's
also?
They represent the city's strength. You know, cities are in my mind only as strong as the schools that serve their people.
Mm.
So I've always just found them interesting in that time and. You know, Schenley in particular had such a wonderful history with its, you know, part of that history was its epic collapse in, you know, the 60s and 70s, and then its rebirth in the 1980s.
The epic collapse?
Just, you know, academically, it struggled a lot in the late 70s and 80s. And they did a turnaround program in the late 80s where they called it, rethemed as the Schenley High School Teacher Center. And it was like the first of its kind in the nation where all the district's teachers would cycle through Schenley to update their method. Like every teacher in the district did, you know, like a 60-day stint there.
So it was like a teacher's college.
It was a teacher's college, yeah. And that was, at that point, you know, very revolutionary for Pittsburgh in the area. And the great statistic about that is, I think by early 80s, Schenley was second lowest in performing. By, the, you know, 92-93, it was second highest performance. So literal, you know, and at that point, there were still, 10-12 city high schools. Mm-hmm. So it leapfrogged a lot.
Because
of the teacher center, yeah, it was, and that was also around the time that international baccalaureate and things like that were really starting to become a thing in America, and we were one of the first in Western Pennsylvania.
There's only a handful of those in Pittsburgh.
Yeah, there's only one in Pittsburgh. You know, it's at Obama currently. I don't know about
St. Clair
the suburban.
Used to have one?
Yeah, I'm not. I don't know.
Yeah, that's
what. That's your
there.
Record. You have expertise. Is the suburbs.
I always remember that. Yeah. There was only. Schenley, like I had friends at Schenley and then friends at St. Clair, Upper St. Clair.
Yes, Upper St. Clair sounds right. I feel like I do remember that
one. Yeah. There might have been a third out there, but those were the two that were well known that had the program.
And Schenley also just had like a really great mix of programs. It was where English as a Second Language was. It's the Pittsburgh Ballet Theater. Mm. So all the ballet students who were, you know, come around from the nation to train at PBT would go to Schenley.
Wow.
So we just had this really great mix of, you know, kids from the deepest roots of Africa and, you know, the most ballet-driven children from Dallas.
Yeah.
And, you know, the IB kids from Bloomfield and Highland Park and then all the, you know, the Sugar Top and Hill kids. So it was just a really... That was a wonderful just mix of people.
What was the reason given for closing it, for choosing that one to close?
Well, this is only a half an hour program, as I've been told. So
we could do like part one and part two if we want.
There's a lot of conversation. You know, there was a lot of rumors about that too, and was the district plotting with UPMC at the time and all sorts of. But the facilities reason was that it was going to cost too much to renovate is what the district's reason boiled down to is that a lot of its systems had reached the end of their life.
Yeah,
you know, it was an old building. It had a lot of asbestos was the firework that they threw around, that there was so much asbestos in Schenley that it would be impossible to renovate without it costing. The district never said anything less than $70 million would be the cost solely to renovate Schenley High School.
Wow.
You know, which it was a pretty big building. You know, it was one of the larger schools. And
were you one of the last class?
Yeah, so we were considered the last class. We started freshman, sophomore at Schenley. Then they shipped us off to Risenstein to wrap things up.
Remember that.
And then, you know, Risenstein itself is
demolished.
A part of time now, too.
Right.
It was lovely, though.
And
really
then
lovely
did you
place.
Finish at Obama?
No, so we were the last class of Schenley. So they shut down Schenley in diploma-wise. We got the last diplomas because we were there.
Okay.
And then they were at Risenstein for one or two more years before moving to Peabody.
Okay.
When they shut down Peabody and moved IB into there. Which became Obama today.
Wow.
It's also just so hard to keep track of. Yeah, like, there's so many names just aren't even on the buildings they were anymore. Yeah. You know, it's just.
Or it hasn't. the name's on the building, but it's a different name.
It says, you know, the build the name etched in stone says this, but it's not what that's, you know, known as anymore. And it's even in your neck of the woods, like at French, you know, Friendship or Montessori is at Friendship School, you know.
Yeah.
What's the other one over there? Miller in the Hill is at the old McKelvey building now, which is...
So it's like Pittsburgh thing. Like they're old things. They take on new names.
What it used to be known as.
What it used to be known as.
I've always had like a weird thing. Miller closed. Well, I didn't close too, but Miller in the Hill, which is at the McKelvey building on Bedford now.
Okay.
Used to be across the hill, kind of diagonal up from Fifth Avenue High and up where it's off of Reed Street and Miller Street, but... Yeah, we were the era where things just really started
moving
around.
Place.
It was wacky times then.
Now one of the things that's kind of connected to this, I'm going to call it the Shenley mystique, is and it's related to a bus trip and a plane trip.
Okay.
That I was on. So one of my friends, Lena Andrews.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
This is just a quick story. This goes full circle. So we're on the bus one morning and I'm like, hey Lena, how you doing? She's like, oh great, you know, my brother was writing a book. You know, if you've known Lena, she's just kind of like matter of fact, and she's like, yeah, my brother wrote a book and they just picked up the screenplay and so now they're gonna make a movie out of it. And I'm like, wow, that's amazing. She's like, yeah, that's pretty cool. And then fast forward a couple like a year plus or whatever, I see her husband Scott and I'm like, oh hey, what's up? And she's like, yeah, we're going to this movie premiere for Lena's brother. I'm like, oh, that's great. And I like connect the dots, and it's this movie called Me, Earl, and the Dying Girl. And just last summer, I never got to see the movie, and I'm flying into Pittsburgh, and I look up, and I'm like, oh, look, here's this movie with Lena's brother. So I'm starting to watch it, and all of a sudden, I'm like, it's James Hill.
Oh, you're a movie star.
It's a movie star. So
Leo wasn't the only one who got beat out that year. I was saying, people, where was my nomination?
Do you have like a Actors Guild card?
All right. Jesse went to, Lena's brother Jesse, who wrote the book and everything, was the same year in Shenley with my sister.
Okay.
I mean, they didn't really know each other, but like, you know, you know of the people who went there. And Jesse kept in really good touch with one of my teachers at Shenley, a guy named Joe Eamon. Who was the film teacher and everything.
Okay.
And so we had known each other, and like when he was filming this movie and everything, we were like, oh, everybody's being extras, you know, you should just come and, you know. And it was so weird. So this was the weird part, was this is after Shenley had closed. So, you know, like nobody had been.
This is about, what, 3 years ago? Two years ago?
Yeah, that sounds right. Yeah. But we had snuck into Shenley all the time after it closed, but that was a different story.
Okay.
So like officially on paper, it had been closed for years, you know. Right. And so nobody had seen it or really been back in and everything since. And so here come I, still managed to have a key ring, like put on like my Letterman sweater. I was like, I'm back, everybody. You know what I mean?
Did you bring your asbestos mask?
Yeah, like, I was like, yeah, right. So I was like, asbestos. So I was like, and it was really fun. So like we got to be extras in the movie, and it was like so surreal because it was open for a couple months. There were, you know, 400 or 500 people in there being extras as students and everything. And we were like back in the cafeteria, and it was just so surreal to be like back there. And, you know, it was really fun to be in a movie. And also filming movies is terrible. Like we were
because
in
the
there.
Downtime?
Yeah, no, just the time in general that you put in the scenes that they end up cutting. Like it was.
So you had other scenes?
Yeah, we were in like, I was in like, I think 3 or 4. And then I had 2 more that got cut that I was in.
Really?
Yeah. And
so there's like cutting room floor footage
of me in the auditorium looking sad. You know what I mean? Like,
are you supposed to be a student?
Yeah. So I was like, you know, at that point I was younger than most people who play students in movies. You know what I mean? Like, what's the age now? I feel like it's like 27 to like 36. They let you play a high schooler.
Right.
So I was like still in my early 20s when this was happening. So and we played a student. And I was like a background student, and then I got to make like, I didn't get any lines, so I got to make like a poignant look. So there's this one scene where is like,
ooh, good one.
So like the main dude,
that is a poignant look.
He like got caught in the class like with marijuana or something, and like he said I swear like I didn't put it in my bag or something like that. And me and the girl who were sitting on either side of him in the classroom, like, look at each other like, you know, what crap, you know? So, like, there's a moment and I get to have, like, my little scene in the movie. And I'm like, oh, well, I want to thank the Academy, first of all, for everything they've done. You know, these roles are tough to find these days. I mean, it was a lot of fun. What did you think? Awful. I mean, when you watched it.
Yeah, I had, first, I had two reactions. One was, oh my God, it's James. I can't believe it. Wow. And then, you know, to your scene, I was like, he just got to play himself.
Yeah,
I
mean, I was just playing me. And James Hill as cool James part. Hill James circa Hill. 2006. You know, like, that was like it. But it was a lot of fun.
Because the face he made was like, the face you made.
Yeah. What's going on? Schools. Yeah. You know? Yeah. Here's me in a book bag. You know, like, it was a lot of fun.
As for the movie, I thought it was, I thought it was a great movie.
It was a great movie.
And I think actually, you know, as Pittsburgh movies go,
yeah,
and probably, you know, because, you know, people like yourself and Jesse, like, it was, I think, one of the best depictions of Pittsburgh.
I agree. It was, you know, I'm like a stickler for, like, reality. So yeah. I get so annoyed in Pittsburgh movies, you know, like I think of The Dark Knight Rises where they're racing through Gotham City, you know, right, aka driving in circles up and down Smithfield Street, you know, right, like 25 yeah times. Like, I thought it was very authentic to Pittsburgh, yeah, and mostly they got like, it was about the neighborhoods, you know. I come to think, I don't even think there was like a shot of downtown.
No.
You know, and I think that says something. It wasn't about, you know, the suburbanite or your Western, like, oh, downtown in the north side, you know what I mean? Like, it was about, they like lived in Bloomfield or Polish Hill and stuff, and yeah, we're hanging out in like Oakland, and that's like a thing that I think makes it real. Is when you grow up here, maybe a little bit less for you, like in the suburbs. Like, I never went downtown, like, you know what I mean? Like, I went downtown on Bring Your Child to Work Day,
right?
You know what I mean? And like maybe once for a light up night, but when you like grow up here, you don't just like
thing.
Yeah, you don't hang out downtown. You know, you hang out
yeah
in Highland Park and at and in Squirrel Hill, and you jump the fence at Highland Park Pool as a kid. You know.
Those things that really kids do in their neighborhoods.
Yeah, in their neighborhoods. And mm-hmm that's what it was a neighborhood movie. And yeah, I really appreciate neighborhood movies more
yeah,
so than
I thought stuff. I thought it was really special in that regards. I mean, like, the one that came to mind too is was it Wonder Boys with
Wonder Boys.
I'm looking at David for cinema. He's like, I don't know, for for cinematic connections, but Wonder Boys with Michael Douglas.
In Pittsburgh.
I think it was a Michael. I'm not going to quote it anymore. But yeah, but basically, they did some shooting in Friendship, which I would say is probably the closest to what Jesse was able to do. But yeah, I think Jesse kind of like,
oh, he surprised. And it was an indie. It was like an indie hit. Like, it won like some all these yeah random indie awards. And
I'm gonna have to get it from yeah the
you
library. Get,
you should go to the Carnegie Library.
From the library.
Yeah. Yes.
I'm gonna order it as soon as we're done.
From the library. Nowhere financially involved, but from the library.
That's right. And how would you do that? Would you use
the library? I would use the library app, yeah, right on the phone.
That's yeah perfect. That's perfect.
Generally, what a place. You know, just, I love the, I mean, you guys can appreciate too, like the era of government where we built massive things like that, and we built buildings like this
yeah
buildings,
yeah,
and they were meant to, you know, inspire the people, you know, like, generally its mm-hmm motto, it was inscribed in the auditorium, was meant to inspire you, or meant to enter to learn, but go forth to serve.
Wow.
That was our motto.
That's deep.
You were supposed yeah to go there, enjoy your time, learn, and then it was about leaving and making the
an
world
impact
better.
That's fundamental. I mean, you guys had a thing actually, a couple weeks ago, just to pick up on that maybe for a second, to talk about work for a minute, the Biophilic Cities workshop that you
yeah
put
that
together.
Yeah. James was there.
Popped up. And you guys were talking about this is a great idea, maybe, is the flower show.
Yes, the city-county building yeah flower show.
Tell us a little bit about that, the workshop, and then like maybe some of the thoughts that you had about the flower show.
Well, so Biophilic Cities is a network that the city of Pittsburgh now belongs to. So we joined Biophilic Cities in 2016, and it's run by Tim Beatley, who's a pretty well-known professor out of the University of Virginia. So he happened to be in town for an event at the Phipps Conservatory a couple weeks ago, and we brought him in to do a workshop. So the idea of Biophilic Cities is that it's designing to connect people to nature. Mm-hmm. So, you know, events or buildings. So we kind of got about 40, I would say, city employees from different departments. We had city planning, the mayor's office, who else do we have? DPW was there. And so we all looked at different projects and tried to figure out how we could incorporate biophilic design into those projects. So we looked at a streetscape. We looked at a facilities building that the facilities division is going to be doing in a park. We looked at, you know, some parks planning. And then we also looked at the city county building. So that first floor, which was kind of the group that James was in. I don't know if you want to talk about it a little bit.
What are some of the big thoughts that you have for the city county?
Back in the day, we used to do, like, the building, you know, was designed to function as a grand public space, you know.
Right.
I think we've, in general, suffered from afterthought when it comes to its placement. You know, like in other cities, City Hall is like the focal point, you know.
All
the
roads and physical location.
Yeah, it's physical location. Okay. It was designed to be a grand public space, but I think its physical location has hampered that over the years, you know. Yeah. In Philadelphia, all the roads lead to City Hall, like San Francisco, there's, you know, they have like a national mall leading up to it. You know, a lot of city halls are, by nature, cemented in grand monumental places. Or, you know, there's at the very minimum like a city hall park or plaza across the street from them or something.
Oh, wouldn't that be nice?
That's my big dream.
Instead of that parking lot.
Instead of that great parking lot.
Yeah.
So back in the 70s,
if I win the Powerball, by the way, that's
what you're going to do.
You're buying it.
I'm buying it.
But for what amount, or no matter what? If you win $1 million, Grant's going to give it only to this project.
I mean, then I'll buy like a little plot.
Yeah,
know,
just a parcel.
Like a spot. Yeah. You know, and maybe just roll out like some sod.
You could do it right in the middle, like Mount Oliver.
Yeah, just like Mount Oliver.
Just like the Mount Oliver of the parking lot.
Well, which is why we haven't dug a trench around them and been done with it. Beyond me.
I call Mount Oliver the Vatican. It's like, you know, or Liechtenstein or something like that.
It's just as beautiful as Vatican City.
Particularly this time of year. But physical place, though. Like,
yeah, and so anyway, it's designed to be a public place where the public is meant to come and enjoy. And we've gotten better at that in recent years, but back in the 70s when the city ran Phipps, you know, they came and erected these beautiful, gorgeous flower shows that ran down the center of the main hall.
Wow.
And it was beautiful. And really, I mean, I've showed you guys some. It's truly gorgeous. And if we find some money, you know.
Yeah.
People will complain about allergies, but we can bring some flowers back in here.
Yeah, I mean, but you also did something great this year, so you're the guy that's up to it. I mean, you brought...
You said up to it.
Yeah, brought the gingerbread houses, and you saved that.
Which I am very proud to announce here today for the 15th time, there was not a single roach sighting at the end of the gingerbread house display and competition.
That's amazing.
Stayed awake at night.
Stayed awake at night.
Waiting for the raid cam.
Waiting for the call that, like, everybody hated me because roaches had infested every office on the first floor. I waited desperately each morning to get that email that, like, I was done. Like, not a single roach.
Not a single roach. That's awesome. Roach. You know?
Yeah, but, you know, this place is meant to be the people's place. And, you know, we've been doing stuff with getting more tours in here with doors open and stuff. We've had... Each October, 2,000 people have come through and toured the staterooms and the mayor's office and everything. And easily, you know, early estimates, we think at least 50,000 people came through the course of the gingerbread house display. The security guards did end up hating me because, you know, we couldn't imagine we couldn't imagine how many people would come, but there were lines down 4th Grant Street some
of
nights.
Did you get a head count on the gingerbread house?
So they said they easily seen minimum like 2,000 people each Saturday and Sunday from November through January. And then, you know, hundreds. I mean, you guys are during the workday. At night, it would start filling up again and everything.
Yeah, so it was funny to leave work and then see like a line of people
trying to get in. And you're like, move. Get out of here.
I'm out of here.
Get out of the way. But, you know, just working with stuff to make this place more represented. You know, it's supposed city halls, I think, are also like that. You're supposed to feel as if they are gathering places, and ours is getting there, but it really doesn't.
And stars, like, to introduce it to people, I think, that it is a public space and a people space.
It is. It's meant to be a people space.
Right. Now. So with, you know, maybe a couple final thoughts, I guess. I mean, what is that type of opportunity to do? What would it take to bring the flower show here?
$50,000.
That's it?
Yeah, we can pull it off for $50,000.
That's like some strip tickets and spaghetti dinners. And
we can fill it off for $50,000, you know. You know, whether Phipps would be as involved, you know, I would want to work with them. I don't want them to feel like they compete or anything, but, you know, we are their landlord, so I also kind of don't care. But
is there an opportunity to co-opt all their Cuba plants? Aren't they changing out of Hawaii, I think?
Only if they're a violation of their lease.
So they have a Cuba room that they've been curating, I think, the past 3 years.
Yeah, it's been several years now.
I think I want to say it's like every 3 years. So they sent a bunch of people to Cuba to go figure out what they were going to bring back. And then now they're going to change it over to Hawaii.
If they're in violation of their lease, we can go in and seize everything.
We're going to seize the Cuba plants.
Yeah.
So I'm getting the hook here from our production team.
So great segue. I didn't even notice.
So I think what we're going to have to do is do an episode 2 at some date in the future. Have James back to talk about the finding the ways in which we can commandeer the Cuba plants from Phipps, bring more local movies to Pittsburgh's neighborhoods, and a host of great things. Rebecca, I want to thank you. James, thanks. I want to thank you as being a guest. This has been a lot of fun, and we look forward to future conversations with you.
Always. It's always good to see you, man.
Awesome. All right. Thanks, guys. Thank you so much for listening in to the Grant Street Experience. I'm your host, Grant Irvin. I want to thank Rebecca Kiernan and James Hill for being here with us today. We look forward to seeing you next time with our guest, David Finer, from the communications team here in the city of Pittsburgh. So looking forward to listening in. Thanks so much, and thanks to the team for putting this together. Talk to you soon.